A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host for this journey into issues facing the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues these organizations are facing. Today, we'll turn to the world of music schools and conservatories, which are constantly being challenged to keep their curricula up to date and ensure that they are offering their students the skills they'll need to build careers in an ever-changing musical landscape. As it prepares to mark its 100th anniversary, the San Francisco Conservatory of Music has launched new programs, including one in jazz and American music. We'll hear more from President David Stull and Simon Rowe, Executive Director of the Conservatory's new Roots, Jazz, and American Music program. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. The Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra will make its BBC Proms debut this season, with Louis Langres leading the orchestra in Copland's Lincoln Portrait and Bernstein's On the Waterfront. The Pittsburgh Symphony, the other featured American orchestra this season, will perform works by Mahler, Dvorak, and John Adams. Throughout the summer, the Proms will highlight the theme of music and politics, including a sampling of works by composers who lived through the 1917 Russian Revolution, an exploration of Finnish music as Finland marks 100 years of independence, and a look at music that grew out of the Protestant Reformation 500 years ago. In addition, the Proms will offer its first-ever sensory-friendly performance geared toward children and adults with autism, sensory impairments, and learning disabilities. The Proms kicks off July 27th with a celebration of John Adams' 70th birthday. A full list of BBC Proms performances can be found at bbc.co.uk. In other orchestra news, the Seattle Symphony announced that music director Ludovic Morlot will leave the orchestra at the end of his contract in 2019. Morlot has led the orchestra since 2011, adding a late-night concert series and a greater focus on community-oriented programs. In a statement, the symphony said Morlot will return as a conductor regularly following his departure. And finally, mezzo-soprano Christine Jepsen, who premiered the role of Kitty Oppenheimer in John Adams' opera Dr. Atomic, has passed away. The news was reported by Norman Lebrecht on his blog, Slip Disc. According to Jepsen's website, the Iowa native studied music at the University of Indiana in Bloomington and debuted at the Met in Britain's Death in Venice. She has become well known for her portrayals of Octavian in De Rosen Cavalier, Sesto in La Clemenza di Tito, and Sister Helen in Dead Man Walking. Jepsen was 54. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. The San Francisco Conservatory of Music traces its history back to a piano school operated out of a remodeled home and serving four students when it opened its doors in the fall of 1917. As it prepares to celebrate its centennial, the conservatory has grown to offer far more than piano instruction. Among its most recent additions are a technology and applied composition program and a roots, jazz, and American music department that features a residency by the SF Jazz Collective. I spoke with President David Stull about how the conservatory has worked to ensure that its programs continue to provide students with the tools they'll need to launch music careers that can thrive in a dynamic musical world.
We've launched an entirely new curricular model, which is now in full force. It's made a dramatic change in what we're able to deliver to our students. And as we were considering the fact that the internal mechanism of how we were educating our students had changed the conservatory, we recognized that that had to be true relative to our external projection of the school as well. And so that's where the rebranding came about, was to essentially develop a means of communicating our message clearly, concisely, and through the very look of what we produced, emulating what it is we seek to project, which is this is about preparing artists to be highly successful and giving every student an education for life.
Let's take a step back for a moment and look at the atmosphere and environment in which music schools and conservatories are working today. What are some of the major challenges that you've been facing in coming up with ways to prepare your students?
from my point of view, challenges always represent opportunities. And I think that anyone who is successful in the world today needs to perceive the world that way. Because often we can think about the profession or the professional world beyond. Being successful in any profession now is a highly competitive business. So for music schools, I think for us, and I'd say for any institution, the key, first of all, is to disconnect yourself from a vocational role. The notion that a music is a trade school that teaches you the trade of music really devalues how transformative the experience is. I mean, music is an incredible art form. It reflects, I think, our humanity in a way that no other art form can or is intended to. And it gives us an understanding of ourselves that we cannot know or discover through other means of communication or language or artistic representation for that matter. But along the way in becoming a professional musician, the reality is the skills that are developed in an individual are focus, understanding of excellence, the capacity to work at an unbelievable pace and extremely hard, the ability to cope with failure, the opportunity to work under tremendous pressure. You have to work on your own. You have to work on a team. You have to be highly creative. And we started thinking about music not just as a means of preparing someone to be an artist, but developing inherent skills in an individual, we realized that by amplifying the curriculum in significant ways in some key areas, it was really a tremendous way to also comprehensively educate a person for success. Because if we combine the skills I just listed with those of a strong knowledge of how a business functions and good skills as a business person, in addition to the capacity to think critically and ultimately the ability to have a tolerance for risk, we could bring those four things together. You're talking about adaptable skills in a profession that can prepare a person for success over a lifetime. That forces us to look at the curriculum and say, what is it that we want to do differently now so that we don't in any way undermine the preparation of the artist, but amplify the experience in such a way we end up with a world-class education, not only prepares them for success in art, but any endeavor. So in a way, the challenge of, how are orchestras functioning, how are opera companies functioning, how do the traditional mechanisms through which artists finance are functioning, allowed us to then enter into a set of discussions of, okay, well, we now know that small ensembles are the key. They're far less expensive. If they're self-managed by the individual players, you don't have management fees beyond that. And each of these ensembles, actually, the ones that are really successful now, there's some common denominators there. How do we create curricularly the experiences necessary to bring about skills in our students such that they can enjoy a similar success? And that's where the overlap between how the professional world has evolved, mated with our desire to have a degree program that was comprehensive and prepared students for success in life.
Another way that it seems that you're reflecting some of that is the shifts and way that you're adapting your curriculum to really take a broader look at music within the context of politics, philosophy, social justice. How right. has that shaped your curricular focus?
Well, what has happened there is that as we imagine how we're going to teach critical thinking, for example, music students are highly focused. And if you go back historically and look at how a conservatory curriculum was created, really conservatories, when they emerged out of the European tradition, were just apprenticeships. And that was the model for teaching a craft. So if you wanted to be a blacksmith, you apprenticed with a blacksmith. If you wanted to be a musician, you apprenticed with a musician. And that was the core relationship that served as a foundation for understanding conservatory training. Well, as schools began to emerge and degree programs began to emerge, what happened was is that a general education component was more or less bolted on. And that was borrowed from more of a collegiate tradition, say a tradition of exploration. And say in a liberal arts college where you might explore for 2 years by taking courses, you then declare a major in the end of your sophomore year, and you have 2 years of focus in a given discipline. The problem is that musicians come in intensely focused. They've already made that choice, and they have a laser beam, if you will, on what it is they want to achieve. So if you try to bolt on a culture of exploration to a culture of focus, it's not as effective in actually bringing the skills that you actually derive from, say, general education courses to music students in a way that are useful. So we chose to integrate the liberal education courses we have here to what we're doing artistically. So, for example, thematically, we might have music and politics, as we did last semester, be part of the term, and then we had courses, say, in the Russian Revolution while we're also teaching Russian composers up through, say, Shostakovich. We then had, say, courses in the rise of Napoleon, and we were discussing the Third Symphony of Beethoven and his work at that time. And then we moved forward into, say, Frederick Shevsky and Ted Hearn. And we looked at Katrina, and we looked at the politics of the 60s and the 70s and the civil rights movement. And we taught courses around those ideas and those concepts as we were also performing that music. And so students had this progression really through history with academic courses attached that created context, you know, the intellectual context through which art was emerging with those specific time periods. And what happens is that when they're writing and communicating with each other about what they're learning in class, it is directly related to what's happening artistically in their lives at the same time. And those connections emerge in a far more visceral fashion. And that's how you get towards the heart of really creating an environment where critical thinking becomes a part of the everyday life of the students. So it's been really far more successfully imagined it being. The students have latched onto this concept in a dramatic way. Now they're proposing topics they would like us to curate around. And it creates a more dynamic atmosphere for the faculty because as we curate each year, it allows us to offer courses we may not have imagined before. You think about the relation between music and mathematics and the opportunity to, say, study the Fibonacci series and the works of, say, Mozart and Bach, among many, many other composers. You think about the relationship between music and the natural world and how natural themes have emerged in the context of music and what is happening, say, within the context of climate change or the evolution of the planet. I mean, all of these concepts are really interwoven. And what happens is that you end up with a highly focused education, not one that's exploratory, but that is still in a manifest way yielding the skills necessary for success, you know, which are certainly artistic, intellectual in nature, as well as this capacity for being entrepreneurial and having a penchant for being creative.
Well, one other dynamic of the curriculum is the addition of the Roots Jazz and American Music program.
Yes.
What does that add, and why did you feel now was the time to get that off the ground?
We actually added two programs. One was in technology. We did that 2 years ago, and that's Technology Applied Composition, which is a fantastic program that prepares composition students who are classically trained to score for video games, for film, to do sound design. And we're in the heart of the professional world here in San Francisco and that kind of work. And so we have a wonderful faculty that we draw from Sony and from Skywalker Studios, and the students then have professional opportunities in both those locations. And it's just taken off because it's a program we can offer in a way that no other school can because we're in the center of where that professional activity is happening. For Roots Jazz and American Music, the opportunity was presented vis-a-vis the SF Jazz Center. SF Jazz is an entity here in the city. They now, I think last year, they actually exceeded Jazz at Lincoln Center in the number of artists they had presented over the course of the season. And they have a resident ensemble there, the SF Jazz Collective, which is really a collection of some of the superstar artists in jazz from across the world. And by bringing the collective into the conservatory, we could then, again, provide side-by-side opportunities for our students to perform with the collective on stage at SF Jazz, as well as studying with these great artists. And to be able to have a direct link from a curricular point of view with one of the major performance venues in the world relative to student experience, again, is something no other school enjoys or really can enjoy unless they're in a particular location. So that was one of the driving factors, just the pure opportunity of that. But the most important factor, when the overriding reason we did it, is that, you know, improvisational music, and not just the American art form of jazz, but roots music, where does jazz come from, the Afrocentric nature of it, and how do we think about, frankly, music from cultures around the globe impacting the opportunities for our students, particularly improvisational music. And this is a key piece. You know, students learn to improvise or engaged in improvisation when they come back to play music that has more of a formal structure to it. They bring with them a sense and a flair for being creative in the work that they're doing. By the same principle, students who are emerging out of, say, an improvisational tradition, when they're around more of a structured approach, as you find in much of the canon, it gives them a set of ideas and, frankly, a set of technical opportunities that they wouldn't enjoy in a program just purely dedicated to jazz or roots music. So the fusion is one both of opportunity in the presence of SF Jazz, but primarily because of philosophy, which is when you can expose students to the multiple genres of music around the world and the tremendous resources that come with that, you make them far more creative people, and you inspire them to think very differently about the career path they might take and how they might incorporate music very differently into their own work going forward. And when you create the conditions for new ensembles to emerge, as we have through winter term, where groups of 5 or 7 or 8 players can come together around really any instrumentation, it gives them the opportunity to look ahead and to say, gee, how do we take this group and create a sound and create a profile for ourselves that could be really successful in managing an ensemble and producing music we really enjoy performing? And that really is the future of music, because that ensemble is far more affordable. It's far more manageable. It provides an experience you can't get in most other places. And so by creating a following, they create a demand for their own work. These concepts are all interrelated, but that's essentially an overview of why we thought about bringing RJAM into the program now.
Well, you'll be welcoming your first class this August. What has response been like, and what do you anticipate that first year being like?
The applications literally came pouring in for the RJAM program. We're going to have a challenging year in really being able to just choose the few that we need to come into the school. I mean, imagine we'll have probably 15 students in the first class, and it'll be a varied instrumentation, of course. There's an intensive focus on small ensemble work here, so they're going to be immediately inserted into small ensembles and coached by the SF Jazz Collective, as well as full-time faculty that we have at the school.
All of these changes do come as the conservatory is preparing to celebrate its centennial coming, I guess, this fall. What are some of the other ways that you anticipate marking that?
The centennial year will be a quite spectacular year. We have 3 major concerts next year, which will have world, really, we've been fortunate to be able to secure a series of artists. I can't announce it on this call, but who will be with us over the course of the season. I will tell you about one, which will be a good time. We're going to have an evening with the Divas, which is where we have really the major sopranos working in the field today with us, and they'll be both in conversation and also singing arias from the stage. Just as a singular example of a range of events that will go on throughout the season. But the fun things we'll be doing next year is that we're going to use the number 100 in pretty much all of our programming. So whether that's 4 Opus 25s or, 5 Opus 20s or or it's a piece that's 100 beats a minute, or, and you can follow from here, it's essentially that we're going to orbit around the number 100 in some clever way in all the programming. Before all of the major ensemble concerts, we're going to do at least a 5-minute talk on some aspect of the history of the school. And the school's history is really quite distinguished. Both Isaac Stern and Yehudi Menuhin studied here. It was the first Masters in Chamber Music in the United States of America emerged from here. The Tape Center, which began in the 60s at the conservatory, was really how John Adams got his start as a composer. Minimalism, in many respects, was most influenced and born here as well at that time, which was, of course, an enormous impact on the future of music. Beyond that, Ernest Bloch was the president of the conservatory. Some of his seminal works were written when he was in the chair, and they were formed here in San Francisco. The school actually was started by 2 women in 1917. And the notion of women running a conservatory of music in the early part of the 20th century was unheard of in the United States of America. And yet today, our technology program is actually led by a woman, and 50% of our students are female, whereas in the world of technology, you just simply don't see that kind of diversity. So a lot of the innovation that has been born out of the history of the school, we will feature and profile, not just in concerts next year, and using the number 100 as kind of a binding principle, but also every concert will be about what's going to happen in the next 100 years. And the slogan for the campaign, in fact, for next year is, it's about the next 100 years. So as we look back over our shoulder a bit to a distinguished past, we're going to be taking each one of those moments in history and projecting really what it means for the future.
That was David Stull, president of the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. Simon Rowe is executive director of the Roots, Jazz, and American Music Program, which will welcome its first class of students this fall. I spoke with him about what the program will cover and how it expands opportunities for the conservatory and its students.
The conservatory is about 100 years old, and the history of jazz music is just a little bit over a century old, but it has yet to have graced the walls in a formal way at San Francisco Conservatory. So we think that it's probably about time to do that. And the advantage of having waited a little while to get this program underway at the conservatory is that jazz education itself is fairly much a newcomer to the music education world of higher education. It's only about 40 years in the making, really, as opposed to sort of Western European conservatory training, which is several hundred years old in terms of the way that things have been traditionally done pedagogically, etc. So we benefit enormously from seeing the way that jazz education has evolved over the last 40 years. Certainly, I've spent 30 of those in the midst of it as a student and as a performer and as a teacher. So to have seen how the evolution in thinking that goes into preparing young artists and exposing them to the tradition while allowing the most important piece of jazz music, which is the predominance of the individual voice and the approach or ability to embrace innovation. Those are two extremely important qualities, which I believe, you know, we've created the opportunity for these things to exist very well, I think, in this new program.
How did you design the curriculum to bring together some of these ideas and put them into practice?
We have some very specific goals for the curriculum, and that is that I think most of us as jazz musicians would agree that our most effective learning occurs in a small group context. That is groups of, you know, anywhere from a duo to, you know, maybe up to even an octet, an eight-piece group. But these are the groups that we find ourselves performing in most often. You know, the big band, as you know, is another vehicle, but I think that history has shown that the really essential, the nuance of the essential skills are really acquired in this small group context, because there's only usually one player of each instrument, whether it's bass or drums or piano, guitar or a horn of some sort, saxophone, trumpet or trombone. And so there's an accountability factor that really is hard to duplicate in any other circumstance. So we're really emphasizing this small group experience, and we're doing this by rotating our curriculum through what we're calling our working ensembles. So these ensembles that we put together, not only will they be essentially the type of working group that you might hire to play at any sort of function or that would perform at the concert in the concert situation, but we're bringing them into the laboratory, as it were, at the conservatory. And we're doing this for three committed two-hour rehearsals a week, and we'll actually be breaking down the components of that small ensemble experience, you know, during those quote-unquote rehearsal or class periods. So this, of course, is done at some other places as well, but usually the curriculum is not the focal point of those meetings. Usually one would go outside those rehearsal periods to take a class in, say, improvisation, or to take a class in composition, or to take a class in repertoire or styles. But here we're actually combining those skill sets with that working ensemble experience.
Another aspect of the instruction includes a close partnership with the SF Jazz Collective. What does that bring? What do these musicians bring to the program?
What's wonderful about the collective is that they represent a huge cross-section of what the modern jazz world looks like, performing world and composing world looks like today. You know, we have artists with all sorts of backgrounds. Edward Simon is from Venezuela, a remarkable pianist and composer. David Sanchez, Miguel Zenon from Puerto Rico. So they bring their cultural backgrounds to the jazz discipline. Obed Calvert has, although he's from Miami, has Haitian roots. And, you know, Matthew Penman, the bassist, is from New Zealand. And Sean Jones, of course, and Warren Wolf, you know, strongly, you know, represent the way that African-American culture has grown in jazz music over the course of the 20th century as well. So we just have you know, this wonderful collection of backgrounds. And these artists are not beginning their careers either. In most cases, they're sort of mid-career. They've been doing it for 20 years or more at a world-class level. And so to bring their experience, their combined experience into the classroom is really, really a rare thing. I forgot to mention also Robin Eubanks, who is trombonist extraordinaire. We're also adding a few other folks we're excited about having on board with us, including Julian Large on guitar, Matt Wilson, a remarkable composer and drummer from New York and educator. And then we also have Chad Lefkowitz-Brown, who is a wonderful tenor saxophonist from the New York region. My wonderful partner at SF Jazz, Rebecca Morleon, is also a lifelong educator and brings her philosophy and values of community engagement. And she represents that, of course, with the SF Jazz Center. But to have her as a partner in crime, as it were, to help create this program in our community here is a huge honor for me. I think, you know, we're really fortunate to have her as a primary representative from the SF Jazz Center.
Well, you mentioned the cultural influences, and my understanding is the program is designed to be in part Afrocentric and looking at that aspect of the development of what we know as jazz. How will the program do that? What are some of the things that will be brought into the curriculum?
That is a very conscious move on our part to include, as you can imagine, when people talk about the history of jazz, they most often reference New Orleans at the turn of the 19th to the 20th century, and rightly so. There were some magical things that happened with a mixture of cultures there that produced great artists like King Oliver and of course Louis Armstrong. You know, Jelly Roll Morton came out of that tradition and that particular location. But what we're finding in today's, you know, contemporary world of jazz is that we're often finding the cousins of that North American form of jazz having a great influence on the world of jazz. So the music and culture that left Africa 400 years ago and found its way to Cuba, to the Caribbean, to Brazil, that music is now as much a part of the modern jazz terrain as any other. So we feel it would be remiss of us not to go back and include that as part of our understanding of style and history. So we're reaching back way past New Orleans, another 300 years to the dissemination of African music and culture out of West Africa, 16 million people leaving West Africa, mostly against their wills, to find their ways around the world into other cultures. So that's the music that we are embracing.
That was Simon Rowe, Executive Director of the Roots Jazz and American Music Program at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. You can find more information on the Conservatory's programs at sfcm.edu. You can also hear more of my interviews, including a discussion of the creativity that went into designing its new logo, on our Arts and Culture news page at wwfm.org. I hope you appreciate the conversations I bring you each week on A Tempo and all of the other high-quality programs of the award-winning Classical Network. Remember that these programs are possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for being a member of the global listening community that is the Classical Network. Thank you for joining me for A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. An archive of recent shows can be found anytime at our webcast page at wwfm.org. Join me next week for another look at the changing world of the performing arts. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is supported by the listener members of the Classical Network.